This is Aiden with Oddball Pilot, sitting here in Nome with the pilot I'm flying with over at Ryanair and the second shift crew from ERA. And we got a whole bunch of us here, so I'm not going to introduce everybody. I'm not quite sure how this is going to work with so many people. We're going to give it a go. And we're going to try a discussion over a thought that I've been having from some of the emails we get, some questions we had from some of our members on the network that just got me to thinking about sort of when I started flying and what I was thinking and the fact that I didn't have any idea where I wanted to go with my flying and how useful it might be to have some idea of where what I wanted to do. And I didn't want to go to the airlines. So the topic on discussion is going to be how to sort of plot a course for a non-conventional career. And we're going to get input from various people here, and we got a large spread in experience, I would say. We got people just starting out, the first job flying in Alaska, first flying job, I think. The people who have been flying up here for, how long you been here, Tex? 80 years?
Pretty much.
Just spent 10 of them in Bethel. That counts double.
double years for Bethel.
So this might be a little random, but we'll kind of see how it goes, and hopefully we'll be able to pull some good information out of this. And to go with that, we got guys flying helicopters here and fixed wings. So that helicopter path is something that I've kind of gotten more interested in, and I can't afford it, but it's, holy shit, that's a fun way to fly. And do you see the sky crane here?
Oh, yeah, it was right there in front of us.
I know, you're right, it was. I kept trying to get pictures of it, but we were on the wrong side of the ramp.
Was in Gullivan this afternoon.
Was it? Yeah. Burns 500 gallons an hour, from what I hear.
Wow. It's $11,000 an hour to charter.
That's pretty cheap for 500 gallons an hour.
Maybe 500 pounds.
What, 500? No, I think it's gallons.
Gallons.
We burn 500 pounds an hour. I'm sure it's gallons, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Think what it does. That's a lot of lifts. And it goes like 80 knots.
Yeah.
Awesome, huh? Mm-hmm. But I mean,
it means it takes almost an hour to go to Gullivan. That's 5,000 gallons.
It has an immense coning when it picks something up. You have a bunch of blades.
Immense coning?
The blades curve up.
Cones. They start coning. It's trying to lift.
That's bad, right?
For like a 747 wing, when you're rolling down the runway, you see it start flying before the plane's in the air. Mm-hmm. Cool shit.
Coning.
So, at any rate, now we've got off topic. Let's get back on task. So, what I'm thinking is there are a few things. I think that before you even start your private, you can start looking for the jobs you want, start making those connections. That's one thought that I've had. And, you know, you just walk around, and if you've got an idea of where you're headed, if you want to fly in Alaska, you know, there's one path you might take. If you want to fly helicopters, obviously you need to get into rotor wing side. But if you want to fly maybe Worldwide Air Cargo, but not a FedEx, like more of a Linden Air Cargo, flying the C-130s, or more oddball freight jobs like the Everett's flying the DC-9s and 6s up here in Alaska. It might be different paths. So I guess what I want to get from everyone here is, like, anyone have any thoughts on when they started flying, what were you guys looking at? And what were you thinking? Did you just want to fly, or did you have an idea where you were headed?
I think everyone starts out just with the sight of, I want to get in the air, you know, fly. Without too much of a career orientation. Until they start getting towards the end of the commercial, then they really start thinking about things.
That's what I'm hearing from people is kind of,
yeah. First it's the ratings, then it's the hours, and then, oh,
maybe somebody will pay me to do this.
Yeah, that's kind of where it went.
And sometimes you may have to suffer through CFI.
Hours and hours
and
of flight
paying off all that schooling as well.
And then you got the debt.
Yeah, and the cost for people starting now is way higher than the cost when, you know, like, yep, we started. I mean, it's significant. And that's why a lot of people look at the airlines, that you make enough money to make it a viable investment.
I think I got, perhaps I was how do I say it? Maybe I was hosed by the UAA program. Only because they had a picture of a 1900 cockpit on the classroom wall. And I remember staring at it, thinking, I'm going to fly that someday.
And you are flying.
And now I am. And that's it.
As far as it goes.
That's as far as I could see, because it was on the wall.
So are you happy?
Pretty much.
Yeah, okay. Well, then maybe
it worked out.
Maybe it's not unsuccessful.
Maybe I couldn't see beyond that.
But that's
I don't know.
See, I think that's
what,
valid.
What else is there?
Yeah, I think that's
you
valid.
You made it.
That's a horrible place to be. Made.
It's time to get some more cows.
And maybe that's the problem that we all have, is we all get dissatisfied once we achieve what we've wanted. And then it's like, well, shit, maybe I'm supposed to want more.
Exactly. And then you see people
who move on,
passing you by. Yeah. And you think, well, I'm happy. Am I? I surely am. Well,
you can always go back to Bethel.
Good.
Or you go to Barrow and make more money.
Bethel's kind of backwards.
Yeah.
That would remind him how good he has it here.
Oh, I see.
That's his point.
So,
guys, under me, getting in dash slots and moving to Anchorage and fulfilling whatever
different dreams. Well, okay, but that's
the schedule doesn't fit. So then there's so many variables in the whole career thing. You get into a job and you might not. You think you set your sights on a job and you're like, you work really hard and you get there and then it just sucks and you're like, man, this is not what I want to do.
Yeah, I
that kind of has happened to me before.
Never experienced that myself.
So you got to change gears, but now you're already like several years into this whole investment and program. And
one thing. Now, I think anybody can get where they want to go eventually. Mm-hmm. In the 80s and the 90s, it wasn't the case. You took what was available.
That's true. The market does now.
It's wide open. There's a lot more opportunities.
The top is
now.
So open now.
Yeah.
So it lets us move around underneath.
But that's the last. That didn't happen until the last year.
Right. That's just now happening.
Yeah,
right now.
The late 90s, they did the same thing for about 4 years.
Until.
And then it crashed big time. And that's one problem is if you do lay out a whole plan, other variables come into play and it might collapse on you.
And then let's say you get the good job, you're flying for United for 27 and a half years.
Oh, God.
And then boom.
Pan Am, Eastern.
Everybody.
Can
there goes your...
No pension.
Yeah. Your whole planning of retirement. And
okay, well, that's a disaster right there, so let's not think about that. let's go
this
back.
It's going downhill.
Let's go back to your 1900. You were going to UAA, and you saw the cock of the 1900. But, I mean, how did you go about getting to that? I mean, now you knew what you had a goal. You had a task. You wanted to fly a 1900.
Right. So I'm sitting in a 152 training, and I look at the 1900 on the wall every day. I walk by it.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Nice guy in a uniform in there.
No. No. No uniforms. It was just a cockpit panel. And the,
complexity. Odd.
Yeah.
But you got to 1900s pretty quick.
Actually, 410 hours.
With Frontier in the right seat.
Right seat.
Yeah.
Frontier.
And then how...
That wasn't...
Quite what you wanted.
Quite what I wanted.
Right. From that time when you, did you just move over to Haglin when Frontier and Haglin merged? Or did you leave in between? I don't know the whole.
No.
I don't know your
merger.
The merger
was just a couple, 3-4 years ago.
That's right. Yeah, but you've been here forever.
Yeah. He keeps pushing that one, doesn't he?
You went to the 172.
Yeah.
That's right,
I came over in 04. In the 172, and I was a captain, and it felt great. So I went backwards from where I had been, and then it was just natural progression at Haglin.
But you kind of had to go backwards to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
So you weren't getting quite what you wanted in the right seat of the 1900 there.
I was at first.
Right, but you were in the 1900.
Yeah, and I only had 400 hours, and a year and a half later I had 2,000.
That's pretty good.
I was flying a lot.
Yeah.
So that probably had a little bit of something to do, a little burnout.
Yeah.
A little abuse, maybe.
Since that came up, I'm going to throw this in right here. It's easy to, when you get your first job, and if the job where you can fly a lot, and I mean a lot, you know, 1,400 hours a year or more, and you're, that seems really good when you start into it because you want to build your hours, and it's easy to get caught up in that. It's really easy 4 years down the road.
Excellent
you
point.
You got a bunch of time, but you really don't like flying anymore. So pace yourself. So you achieved your goal early and then left it, and now you're kind of back at it again. But now you're in the left seat of the 1900.
The left seat is all the better.
Right. Okay, well, that's one thought. And so, but when you started flying, you didn't have a real clear idea of what you wanted. You just wanted to fly.
That's it. And that will take you down roads of being taken advantage of. You got to be careful with that desire to fly.
Yeah, and we were talking about this earlier. There are a lot of airlines that will use that to their advantage and will overwork you. And they're not breaking the laws. They're not doing anything wrong. But it is very easy to get overworked. And it's not necessarily unsafe or anything, but it does just makes you less happy.
You lose out on the spirit of flying, and you become a worker bee.
Right.
In the routine. And so it can get hard.
Yeah.
But if you pace it, and you can enjoy it. And
keep it rolling. That's why you're here, not
and you have a co-pilot to pick on.
So let's move on a little bit. Let's go back to some newer people. We got everybody kind of clumped here. So you guys are just starting out. I'm going to pick on you four right here. What's kind of your...
I think Matt will have a great story.
Matt's kind of been in the industry longer. He's been wrenching, so now you're moving into the flying side.
Yeah.
So you've heard all the pilots gripe for years.
Uh-huh.
You still want to fly.
Definitely.
And do you have an idea of where you want to go if you're flying?
I do. I have a pretty specific direction I want to go. Although being up here in Alaska, it's kind of diluted it a little bit since there's so much cool stuff that you could do up here.
Right.
But when I first got out of high school, I knew I wanted to fly, but I didn't see all the options. I didn't see all the opportunities that were out there. So all I saw was airlines. And I wanted to do a collegiate school, so I went to UND.
Holy shit.
Did that down in Hawaii. Got my private down there.
They have a branch in Hawaii?
They did. But they
so you could be in North Dakota or Hawaii?
You can do your first 2 years of the four-year program in Hawaii.
No offense to Lance, but holy shit, I'd take Hawaii.
Yeah.
Cool, so you were airline kind of bound.
Yeah, and all my fellow students that were in the program with me were very much like airlines. That's what they wanted to do. A lot of their dads were airlines or something, so they wanted to carry it on. But as I got to see, like, that's all they wanted to do in life, and I started exploring all the different options, I was thinking more of, like, the non-traditional stuff.
Right.
It fits more of my personality, and, you know, airlines are so restrictive, and you're kind of in a box your whole life, so.
And it's getting more and more that way.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that Asiana crash, I think, kind of sums up how...
It's going to go away.
Yeah, it's the automation's taking away... Pilot skills are decreasing with the automation, but at the same time, they're fixing that problem by automating more and more because the computers fly the airplanes really well.
Uh-huh.
So I think the airline is going to diminish.
Anyways, it just didn't seem like a very fulfilling career path. It's secure, it has the benefits. For a lot of people, that's really good. But I saw more of like, there's a lot more to aviation, a lot more to offer as far as adventure and traveling and seeing new things. And so I decided that I was going to get my A&P license. And also I saw the expenses. Didn't want to take out the huge loans and then be strapped to a job forever.
Oh, that'd be another how many tens of thousands of dollars more to get the flying part done?
It would have been, back then in 2005, it would have been $60,000.
Okay.
But now it's more.
Yeah, I was thinking like 80.
Yeah.
Just some people we've talked to.
yeah, so it seemed like a very non-sustainable direction. So I decided to just get my A&P and wrench and just kind of fly after that, after getting a job, which is what I'm doing right now.
Which is working.
Yeah, it's working really well.
You're getting paid, you've gotten in with a company,
uh-huh.
and you're an A&P, which is awesome because you can take that skill anywhere.
Exactly, especially and, overseas.
Yeah, and you can get done at a normal hour.
Uh-huh.
And you're paid more.
I wouldn't say his hours are normal.
Yeah, it's very different.
Weird
here,
hours.
Most, normally.
But usually most wrenches I know are on kind of some more standard, unless there's an emergency and they got to change an engine down the field, or, which is kind of fun in its own weird way.
Yeah.
Maybe. Just like my first few years flying, everything was fun, even when maybe it really wasn't. I just didn't know better.
But I went to Moody Bible Institute in Spokane.
Okay.
They've got an aviation, missionary aviation program.
Okay. So you're going mission aviation, you're thinking.
That's kind of the direction that I've been having for a while, and I'm still kind of heading that direction.
Have you talked to mission aviation folks down in Idaho?
I have talked to those guys,
okay.
Yeah.
But that's a big, that's like a 10-year
yeah.
commitment. There's also, we've got one of our pilots, one of our 207 or Unicle, Joel. Do you know Joel?
I haven't met Joel.
He's going to be flying for Samaritan Purse.
Okay.
Which is another, it's a missionary outfit, be raise your own money.
Uh-huh.
You better go raise your own money.
Yeah.
So
that's a challenge, too.
It is. He was just down in Bethel talking to churches.
Uh-huh.
But that sort of thing. So you start, and that's kind of my point, is start talking to people in uh-huh. the direction you want to go early on.
Because right.
they'll know who you are.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah, so ever since I started working for this company, even before I had all my ratings, which I'm just now finishing the commercial, I've been talking to pilots here, and you know, chief pilot Jason, and just
yeah.
telling him I'm here, and you know, kind of getting my foot in the door that way. So,
right,
it's going to work out really well. That it's just going to transition into that.
You need to friend Ross Engel.
I have met Ross.
Excellent.
Yeah,
that's right. Of course, he was here.
Yeah, we met actually on Oddball Pilots.
That's so. Right. Yeah, yeah. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he is.
All right. What about the guy? That's you. Let's move on. But no, but I think that's good. I think you knew, it does seem if you've got an idea of where you want to go, you're more likely to achieve it.
Uh-huh.
And I've always been a little random in my picks.
Right.
And it makes it that you end up, we were talking, it's really you just sort of keep jumping sideways a whole bunch,
uh-huh.
Which is interesting, but maybe not getting anywhere. So, what about you guys? You got three left. Airlines? No.
Did you start out in the air, wanting the airline?
I thought yeah. you guys were going to be airline pilots.
Well, I started out just wanting to fly in Texas, and when I went to a flight school, that led me to the exposure to the airlines. The program that I went through was actually tailored to set you up for a regional airline. They had an agreement with Mesa
yep.
Airlines, yep. and all the guys before me went on to Mesa. They would get interviews at like 250 hours, go to work. And in 2008, when I finished, this is the year Mesa went bankrupt. And so that brought me back to my old dream of always wanting to live up here in Alaska. I've always wanted to do it, even before I started flying. And, you know, things just got in the way. Living in Texas, never made it happen. And once that happened, I went ahead and got my CFI, and I really didn't know even who to talk to up here, and I just drove up.
That works.
I drove up, yeah, went to Lake Hood, started banging on doors, anybody I could talk to. Finally, I just happened to time it just right with Haglund, and, you know, I still didn't know what I was getting into. I thought, you know, maybe go out and live in the bush or something, you know, which sounded great. I wanted to experience anything Alaska had to offer, but...
Well, from this point, and not to Jason Wilson, if you're listening, don't listen. I mean, what do you think from here? You've been out here for a while flying the 1900. Are you thinking you like the bush or you want to move, get to town?
I like it. You know, I didn't realize all the things that Haglund offered.
Right.
I mean, the schedule's great. The pay's good, you know. I mean, it's great. I'd say, you know,
right,
look
Jason,
for your location.
You
location, schedule, and money.
Right.
I guess the three things you want to look at. And Haglund offers all of that for me anyway.
Yeah, and there's always an option of getting into Anchorage, which is kind of...
Yeah, you can... Like I said, the location, it's got tons of locations. Yeah. 10 bases, no?
So it's a lot. About a gazillion airplanes.
Yeah, I believe 10 bases. And then you have all the different airplanes you can fly, you know, multi-engined, piston, turbine, single, multi. Right.
That's what I was talking to the old DO of Hagland, and we're talking whether Von Tweedo was still around. That was Zirkle, and I was saying, you know, what? Where do you think Hagelin would be now if Ron was right? He's like, oh, we'd have jets. It's just, you know, Jim and Mike are great, but Ron was a, let's go big. He'd have a space shuttle. he would have had moon service or something. That's cool. So it's working out the way you think you want?
Yeah, it's really better than I ever dreamed it would be.
Kind of a little bit, it was a little bit by accident. Like you just drove up here and it sort of seems like this might be where you sit for a while.
Right.
So cool. So, and options move around.
Yeah.
Onwards. You just started.
I did just start. And I just started flying about 4 years ago. So I'm pretty brand new. I didn't know I wanted to fly until I was a sophomore in college. And I did an intro flight, and then I just kind of took off with it, Part 61, and realized I was wasting my time and money at a college or university. So I transferred to a two-year and finished there for the associate's degree, stayed for 2 years and instructed. And how I got to Alaska was last summer, mine was all internet. I knew I wanted to go to Alaska. It was a perfect time for me, and I had that summer window to go, and I was originally supposed to end up in Anchorage, and I ended up in Talkeetna, and I spent the summer instructing there, and I loved it.
Above Alaska?
For Above Alaska,
yeah.
You heard of that?
I flew for TAT for a summer, a couple summers, and I mean, I've been in Talkeetna every summer, damn.
Yeah. I actually worked for K2 at the beginning in the office, and then they found out I had my CFI, and I had low hours, and it was all in a tailwheel, and so it was, like, great experience for me.
Yeah.
And
I've probably missed you by that much.
Yeah, probably.
Because I've worked for American Alpine Institute.
Oh.
And we flew in with K2 all the time.
Oh my gosh.
And then my last trip was 2 years ago, so I probably missed you by that much.
No joke. That's crazy. I went back and was senior flight instructor at the college back home, and then I decided that I wanted to officially move to Alaska. So I just started looking things up on the internet, and it was actually your interview with Jason Wilson that attracted me to Hagelin.
Oh, cool.
Well,
yeah.
Did you listen to Mike Hagelin interview?
I never saw that.
Oh, there's a Mike Hagelin interview on there.
Oh,
too.
I'll have to look that up.
It's awesome.
Yeah, because I was
getting Mike to talk about himself.
Oh,
great.
<okay.
laughs>
Not easy.
So now I'm here.
Cool. So yeah, and again, this is what I've been seeing is that it's all. It's kind of random, but not random. I mean, it's sort of like you figured you wanted to fly a little bit later, and you ended up in Alaska, kind of like, I'm just going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now you're here, and you just want to stay flying up here, but do you have any clear goals? Like, do you want to get in the Dash 8 in Anchorage, or are you just kind of playing it by ear?
Kind of by ear. It's amazing, because a lot opened up when I took this job.
Yeah.
And the reason I didn't go back to Talkeetna was because I wanted to see more of Alaska. So that was a big perk for me.
Right.
And I wanted to be able to land on dirt strips and stuff like that. So this is kind of where I want to be for now. And then I want to do bush flying probably later, but not. It's just kind of wide open.
So you're going to go backwards.
I might go backwards. I don't know. We'll see.
That sounds like the way my career's gone. If you get into like the hardcore lodge work, you can get to them. That's like the real bush flying, but it's not, there's not that much of it.
I think it's probably for me, like when I retire or something. Oh, I want a plane to just go do that and do floats.
Yeah.
So that's what fun. I really like. Yeah.
What's the, there's the float flying up in Talkeetna too.
I got mine with the, what is it? It's like,
Alaska Floats and Skis?
Don. What's his, I can't think of the name now.
Don Lee?
Don Lee, there you go. He's legendary.
Yep, that's who I got.
I saw him in Spokane.
Did you?
He was bringing a pacer up. That's how I met him.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah, he is.
But you know what's her name? We used to instruct there. God, I can't think of her name either. She's flying 1900s for
Esther?
You guys now. Esther, yeah.
I've met her once, but I hear she's...
She's in the 207 in Bethel.
Oh.
Update.
She's moving around. Good. She was flying with Dale Pena there. And Cool. That's good. Good for her. She's a good pilot. What I hear.
Yeah.
Cool. So you're just kind of playing up a year sort of at this point. And, I mean, both you guys just came up to Alaska. Is that what, that's how you got your job? It was just kind of coming up.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Made the effort.
Onwards.
Onward.
You know, I'm just curious what people were thinking when they started flying and what they're kind of, how they're plotting their trajectory in aviation.
Mine was kind of all over the place. I started out in college in the Air Force ROTC, and I wanted to go fly jets. So I was in the ROTC for 2 years and was told that I wouldn't be able to fly the jets because I'm over 6'3". And because of my torso height,
I love it when you tall guys get screwed.
Yeah. So that kind of pissed me off. I was like, screw you guys, I'm going to do something else. So I finished out college and went ahead and just went to ATP flight school. I'm sure you guys know who they are.
So at this point, again, you just kind of wanted to fly.
Yeah. At that point, I just wanted to fly. So going to them, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the regionals and eventually go to the majors, and I'll be good. And then the 1,500-hour rule came into effect. I started ATP September of 2011, and my instructor got hired at like 400 hours, and then this rule came into effect, and the minimum just started going up and up and up and up. So I was never going to catch that as an instructor or anything. So I kind of started looking at different avenues and wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, but growing up in Alaska, it was always kind of a draw, like maybe I should just go fly up there.
Right.
And it just happened that I was instructing for a year, and my brother called me up and said, hey, he was working out Nixon Fork Mine and Ryanair flies in there constantly. So he was talking to Lee Ryan and Boyack. And
good thing you got this job a few months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Nixon Fork just, they just shut down. Didn't they shut down?
Yeah, they just shut down because the gold prices dropped like $500.
Yeah, just, oh, my goodness.
And just prior to that, they started using Desert Air instead of Ryan.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. So, yeah.
That's going to hurt, was it Chris there with the Brooks Fuel?
Oh, yeah.
Because he just invested heavily. And a bunch of DC-4s.
Yeah.
To get a Nixon Fork.
That is
really?
It's amazing how this shit trickles down.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's how you ended up here at Ryan.
Yeah. I sent in my resume, and Charlie called me back up. And
cool. And you're just going to ride the Bronco until and see where it goes.
Oh, yeah. And at this point, like, I had no clue. It was really a blessing not being able to get on with the regionals because I had a couple friends that were there, and they were miserable. I mean, one of them actually stopped flying altogether. It's like, I don't want to do this.
Stop flying.
So,
civil mind would lead off.
Get all the TJ and see how he's doing.
Better check on him.
Better.
Better check on him.
He was a good guy. Big TJ. So
he's an eagle now, right?
He is, yeah. And he's so even keel, he'll roll with it just fine.
Yeah.
So again, this is what I'm finding from all the questions, kind of, and Matt, you were the most directed. You've got the best kind of idea where you want everybody
else.
It's
a slow route, though.
It is, but as long as you have to keep it in
perspective
and insight, it's going to make things happen. But everybody else, it sounds, they just really just want to fly, which is good. I mean, that's awesome.
Let's talk to the astronaut.
All right, Ben, what's the story? Long or short version?
Oh, I don't know, I'm just going to kind of go with what they did. I always thought, you know, I wanted to go fly, and I thought the best way to get to where you wanted to go was aim to the highest point you could get in the career, and whatever you get in between is going to be pretty good, even if you don't make it to the top. So that's how I thought about everything like that.
Yeah, but everybody's highest point can be a different...
My highest point. My personal highest point. And so whatever I get on the way to that, I expect, you know,
to be good.
Yeah, something good.
Or interesting.
Right, well, like with, like even with Haglin, and mostly Frontier and Haglin at the time, like I think I first started looking at them pretty young, like 2002.
Weren't you in the Galena?
I was in Galena, and I ride on Frontier and Haglin all the time, 207s to Holy Cross and Frontier, all the time.
2002, you were 12.
I was a teenager, though. But I've been flying. I started flying the gliders in 2000.
Okay.
The powered planes in, like, 2001, 2002.
Cool.
And Hadoukovich just came out and talked to all, you know, the students there and said, "What you done here? You come over to us." So they were inspiring us and stuff like that.
So they came out to the flight school.
Oh, yeah.
That's
a bunch
cool.
of times. And kept telling us to go all the way through with it. He'll hire us. That's what he told all the students. It was nice. And I believe in keep going for the top, no matter where you're at in your career. Just keep on pushing up. And I found what's really been opening doors for me is the more your resume is kind of built up, like the more
stuff on it.
Stuff you got. like if you got twin engine stuff, flow plane stuff, more add-on ratings, more endorsement sign-off, that just frees you up to do all this extra, more interesting stuff on the side. Like how you do ferry flights. You can probably do a multitude of aircraft, right? Twins, singles, maybe floats.
Right. Yeah, if you don't have the rating, you're not going to get
right.
the job.
And
the position.
And with that, the endorsements and even little things that you wouldn't even think of, like the
you got
radio
the
license and stuff.
Radio,
right?
Radio license
things like
that
you don't
can be
think
helpful.
Right, little things.
Yeah.
And that opens every little tiny thing, like the radio license, opens the door. And I think the more stuff you can add on to it gives you more options to be flexible and look around to different things you might wanted to, you know, you might like that you never knew you wanted to do before. Like helicopters, I never thought about that. Never. Had any interest in it.
Well, how do you get a chance to fly helicopters?
That's because of Jim.
Oh.
Just one day, he's out of the blue, tells me to go get the license. And I thought,
awesome.
That's crazy. What's he talking about? We don't have helicopters. So I thought about it for days, and then I came back to him and said, okay. And I just did what he said.
You just always do what Jim says. You could either end up somewhere really good or really bad. I'm not sure which one.
And I came back and said, if you get a flight instructor's license, I'll buy a helicopter. And I thought about it, and I said, okay. And he did it.
Talkeetna Air Taxi, they've got a helicopter now, an R-44,
really?
I think, because Will and Danielle got helicopter ratings and instructor ratings,
oh.
And so Roderick's like, well, why don't we just buy a helicopter? You guys can fly it.
Dang. Yeah. Nice.
Opens things up.
It does.
Opens things up.
Knowing the boss helps.
Yeah. Networking. Any type of networking.
Yes, absolutely helps.
Yeah.
Well, goes back to, like, from even before you start getting your private, start talking to people at places you might want to work. Sky drop zones, glider, you know, centers, anything like that. Doesn't hurt.
And now because of the networking, and just by word of mouth has been spread around the state a little bit, I got this other job now. Going to be flying starting next week. Helicopters out of Ketchikan.
Oh, sweet. For?
For the same place that Tommy Crawford.
Oh.
Yeah. Mostly beavers and floats.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a helicopter there.
Too. I didn't know that. Yeah, I talked to him on the phone. I was thinking of doing some more. Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, and that's opened it up. Like, I didn't even seek that. It was just a phone call to me.
So what you're thinking is get as many, and a radio license, a radio operator's permit is cheap.
Easy.
Yeah,
you
super
just
easy.
Fill out an application and you got it.
And I've seen that with some of the international stuff. To get to convert a license, it's often easier. They want the radio license.
Mm-hmm.
Even to ferry some airplanes to get on some insurance. I've seen companies that are you know, working with the company I'm with to get the planes. They say, well, they have a radio license, a permit, and it helps if you can say yes.
Right. So, I got it just to get it, and then all of a sudden one day I used it.
Yeah.
Like doing a flight across the Atlantic there. And, you know, just out of the blue, came up.
Well, you probably knew how to use your HF.
Well.
See, my first flight, what the fuck, how do I use this damn thing?
no, everything was, I don't know what I'm doing. Every bit of that trip.
I believe in getting in the air and figuring out everything else after we're flying.
You got all kinds of time.
Not if you're going steps to St. Mike's.
Yeah. No, the whole thing was I have no idea what I'm doing. I learned on the way and it was terrible. But
you had the license.
Yes. Sorry, it'd be a piece of paper.
Yeah, yep. That'll get you could get you in trouble.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, every little thing will open something else up. I mean, if you think you'll never use it, maybe once you will.
So here's the thing. The big thing is networking and
diversifying your resumes.
And diversifying a resume. And that's actually one guy we had a discussion going about resumes in particular. I don't know if you saw that with George from Bend. Mm-hmm. And I've heard a bunch of things from different chief pilots, but a big one is actually if you're low time, and I've heard this several times, is if you have 250 hours, don't write down that you've got 2 hours of barren time. You know, write down your multi-time. Right. Don't
do that. I agree with that.
Yeah, they're like, you've got 250 hours. They know where you're at. Mm-hmm. They know you have 250 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're trying to, so that's one thing I hear is keep that somewhat simple. But if you had a radio operator's license, that might be something cool to put on. Or if you had a tail dragger endorsement,
right.
Obviously.
Any endorsements.
Yeah. A glider rating, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, and if you have an opportunity to pick up those endorsements or licenses without spending too much.
An endorsement is not hard to get.
Yeah.
And that can be just networking. If you do it right, you can get free endorsements. Just have friends, you know.
Right. Offer, someone who's a CFI somewhere has access to a tail dragger or
something.
Right. Yeah. A Luscombe.
Right. like Willie Coon.
That'll be my Luscombe someday.
Like Willie Coon gave me my tail wheel and then ferried one after that. Instantly.
Cool.
So just as soon as the endorsement happened, just stuff opens up. Because you start looking at stuff that you wouldn't look at before. Like you never look at seaplane stuff if you don't have a C rating.
Well, absolutely. I found that out. I thought for years I had about 140 hours on floats, and I thought that's not even worth talking to float operators. Now, when I was in Ketchikan talking to people, I got offered several jobs.
Right.
And I was like, dude, I've got 140 hours on floats. And they're like, that's okay. We can teach you. I was like, oh, all right. I'm teachable. I was pretty proud of myself. So diversify and pick up every little bit you can.
Yeah, have a big overall goal, but then just cut the wood in front of you and just work your way up one step at a time.
Well, big overall goal, that's the, and I think that's coming back, like where, you know, like 10, 20, what general direction do you want to go is always a good thing to think about. I mean, if you want the airlines, that's fine, but what's the path to the airlines? It might be through some of these smaller jobs that aren't the commuters, although you might end up with the commuters at some point, but maybe there's an easier path or a better path. If you flew for Hagland and ended up, or actually Ryanair, you end up and you fly the CASA, but you get to left seat in the CASA, that takes some time, but you get a couple of years in it, and you are airline material. You guys get the Dash 8s in Anchorage. Do that for a year or two.
We can go in that whenever we just raise our hand and say we want to go.
Right. Right seat.
Slot open.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I don't know when you do that.
For right now, but that could. Yeah, but the market's pretty good. And if you want to. I keep thinking about it. I know there's some big, like, international cargo carriers that if you keep showing your face and they know who you are, you're going to get on a lot earlier than if you don't show your face. So never think you are too inexperienced to go talk to a chief pilot. Go talk to them and say, what do you guys want to see? And then come back 6 months later, say, okay, I got this. What do you want to see next? And then come back much later and say, okay, I'm getting there. Mm-hmm. I've got this job. I'm working here. By the time you meet their qualifications, they're going to be like, awesome. We've been talking to this guy for 3 years. And this pilot's done everything that we've said they should to get here. Let's hire him. So I know that can work if you want to, you know, if you've got a particular airline in mind that you want to fly for. So, what about you, Steve? You just got a 135 certificate.
Yep.
Has that been a goal for a while, or just kind of a...
It's been a long trip.
I want to have a talk with you another time about how the experience of getting a 135 certificate, but that's a smaller conversation.
Most of the time, it's just patience. You put in your, what they call a PASI. I'm not sure what that stands for anymore. But it's your intent to do 135, right? The FAA sits on that for 6-7 years. And then they'll call you up one day and say, hey, you know, your name is on the list for a 135. Are you still interested?
So what you're saying, you should apply in middle school in 8th grade.
Exactly. One of the things you need is an airplane to apply.
So you get a little model airplane.
There you go. You just need an IN number and a type of airplane. Put it on the thing. And you say, I want to be in a 135 operator. And maybe you should, anytime, everybody should put in a PASI. So the list gets really long, and then they'll start calling people up. Do you still want to be a 135 operator?
Why does it take so long to return the call?
No. It has nothing to do with the list. It's political. It's government. Anything to do with government is politics. And the FAA...
6 years is a long time before they let you start your business.
Right. What it has to do with is, I think any government organization doesn't like Republicans, so they quit doing any work, and then they elect a Democrat, and they think, oh man, we like this guy. He's going to give us more money if we do more work. And they call everybody up, and they do really good work for a little while, and that's when I got my 135 certificate.
So the Democrats got your 135 ticket.
So you should swap parties. Yeah, you should swap parties.
Clint, what is that?
I have no idea.
I'd really like to sit down and have just a talk with you about the whole process, because I know it's long and involved, but in the context of what we're talking about here, why do you want a 135 certificate? Is that something you wanted for more than 8 years?
Well, it started back in Bethel. And Bethel, I go, hey, I could have my own air taxi, and there's a single pilot 135. All I got to do is apply for it, which obviously is not as simple as it sounds. And I did. I had an airplane. I applied for it. And... at the time, they did not have the policy that you put everybody in a queue. Their policy then was, what you do is you take the application and you make the paperwork so convoluted and misunderstanding and that they'll just never get it because they'll get frustrated and quit.
Right, that's Eric C., that happened to him.
And so I got stuck in that group, and that happened, and they sent me letters, and I respond to the letters with, you know, I mean, this is not regulatory. I don't know what you're talking about. they wanted me to have the last letter was something to do with a safety system program with internal auditing. And all I want to do is I want to be able to take somebody in my airplane for money. This has nothing to do with...
when you're a single pilot.
With a
single pilot. So you're going to have to safety audit yourself.
Right. But
that's easy.
But there's no guidelines.
You could do a RAFRA if you wanted to.
There's nothing. There's no guidance. There's no template. There's zero of what they wanted. And so you had to read their mind. And all it is something to stop it. That's all it is.
Right.
Because no matter what you wrote, it's not going to be good enough.
Right. They're just trying to... I heard I was talking to another guy who just got his 135 certificate down in Oregon. And he was having trouble getting it approved, and he was actually going straight to Boise. There just weren't enough people to shuffle through all the paperwork required. and that was one problem. So, I mean, in terms of thinking of what you want to do with an airline career, that actually is a commitment right there. It's 8 years of, well, I mean, at this point, now that you've got it.
The thing to do is if you really had a really good business idea, you would go and you would merge with somebody or buy somebody out or some way to...
Right. That's why 135 certificates are worth a fair chunk of money.
That's what gives them the value.
Yeah.
Because they are difficult to get.
So if you wanted to run your own operation, maybe the best way to do it is actually look around, you know, get a job flying somewhere and keep an eye out for a 135 certificate that's for sale.
Right.
That makes sense.
You know, and then again, it is single pilot 135, which shouldn't be any harder to get than a commercial pilot's license. Really, I think that, you know, the regulations should be lenient enough to let somebody do this kind of work without the cumbersome
bureaucracy that's involved.
It is not that complicated. Right. When it actually came down to getting the certificate, they do their best. Do their very, very best to try to complicate things and make it seem involved, and it's really not.
Right. I love that.
There's very few actual requirements that that are of significance.
Well, I think that goes on even when Hagman was trying to get the 125 certificate. It's just hard working with the bureaucracy to get something through. Mm-hmm. So. So maybe that's not a good path. Better to work for someone else.
And then once you have it, then I'm in this other, you know, dilemma, what to do with it.
Right.
You know, I'm way past flying 207s in Bethel when I initially applied for this.
Well, the new mail system, it's not really...
You know, back then there was 20 airlines in Bethel, and now there's, what, two or three?
Three, counting Ryanair.
Business has changed significantly.
I guess Renfro.
Is Grant still there?
Grant's there.
Hagelin.
Renfro.
Ute.
I forgot Ute.
And Ryan.
Yeah.
And Ryan. Five.
Yeah. Renfro's so, kind of a little smaller gig, though.
Yeah, he's charter, five-plane charter outfit.
Yeah, but he's got BJ-18s.
Are they even on his certificate?
I don't care.
Is it Part 91?
BJ-18s, Devin.
You know, that was one of the, you know, initially I was going to do 135. I was going to be able to do what Renfro does. I was going to do not the village so much. It's the rafting trips and the hunting trips and some of the things that other people were not doing.
Right. Do you think that's hard to get into at this point? If you had a 135, if you had a certificate. Now, can you do that all Part 91?
The guiding, you can do Part 91. If you're a guide and you take people out and you stay with them hunting and you do guide them, that's Part 91. Dropping people off for a raft trip is Part 135.
Or dropping hunters off for a lodge and then leaving them there
is 135.
Is 135. Ah.
If you are the lodge owner and
sure
you are taking
to that
if you're taking people to your lodge, that's Part 91.
What if you're the owner's best friend?
You know, if you're working for the owner and the owner owns the lodge and the owner owns the airplane and you're just flying it, I would think it's Part 91.
Okay. I mean, there's some other interesting paths people can go. I just talked to a guy who used to fly for Hagelin, Arctic. Do you remember Arctic? Is he around when... He flies for Northern Air Cargo
Arctic
now.
Arctic Winkle?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. And he runs Arctic Flight School.
One of the first people I met when I came up here.
Yeah, he's awesome. But yeah, so he's flying 737s for Northern Air Cargo. They're down in Laredo and up here in Anchorage. And he's got a flight school out in Palmer, which I think is probably a pretty cool flight school.
And he got a 135 same time I did. He was in the same group.
Was he? Okay.
Because what the FAA did is they called everybody on this list, are you interested, yes or no? And then they, like, ran a ground school class.
Ah.
Everybody that wanted one went to the class.
I thought they put you in a big field and said you to make it to the other end. And then they had a little machine gun set up.
Got their certificate. Well, you know, they do their share of, you know, throwing it. I everybody goes through 3 or 4 revisions on their paperwork, but you just got to stick with it. And it, most of the time, you go look at it and they go, and by the time you get to the 4th revision, they're like, this is what we want you to say. This is what you want you to put in your paperwork. And you just put it in what they want. I don't know why they didn't just tell you that in the beginning.
The first time, right? Yeah. You think someone should have a course that tells you how to get a 135 certificate.
Well, nowadays, in certain FISDOs...
Steve, you can start that course.
You can buy people to apply for you.
People in the FISDOs?
No, but they're actually companies that make certificates for you.
Didn't Hagman try that with their 121?
Hire one for the 121.
That cost a lot of money.
$1 million.
Yeah.
Didn't get it.
No. I was thinking it was more like our guy in Nepal who said, now, you can take this test, and if you want extra studying, then I will tutor you for $50, and you are guaranteed to pass. Excellent plan.
You know what makes the most difference? Is writing letters to your congressmen and representatives.
Okay.
Because they respond.
Oh, right, right. They'll go to the FISDO.
And they will put your name. They will actually take your letter and they go, what's going on here? And it says, they'll write a letter to the FISDO and say, how come this guy is waiting for 6 years and hasn't gotten any response on his application?
Now you're at the top of the pile.
And that gets their attention.
Right, yep.
But if you call them up every 6 months and just say, hey, when are you going to do this 135 thing? And they'll just say, yeah, well, we'll get to it.
Okay, were you flying low over that fishing boat the other day? All right, let's get back sort of on topic. With the I'm not sure we really decide anything, except maybe if you want a non-conventional career, maybe your best plan is to have no plan and just see where that leads you.
Just swing it.
I like Ben's plan.
That's the way it's going to be anyway.
Aim for the highest spot. The problem is my highest spot was at 207 in Mountain Village at one point.
And that was my point in the beginning. Because of the poster on the wall, that was my highest spot. That's where I could see myself.
That's right.
Why did they put
better posters?
They need better posters.
Well, it's like climbing is the same way, because once you achieve one goal, then there's just something. There's always something else. Right now, I really want to pedal an airplane across the U.S.
Yeah.
They've got these great pedal-powered. They have a pedal-powered helicopter now.
Really?
Well, I mean, it goes like 10 seconds, and then the driver's exhausted. Helicopters are horribly inefficient.
Why can't you get like a group of people with you in there?
I think it's better with one.
Maybe you need animals that have really good endurance.
Or like those bikes that have the bar in the middle, so you can everybody pedals and can drink at the same time.
Yeah, but the kegs on the racks would really hurt your weight to strength ratio, your power to weight ratio.
We gotta get Tommy.
Hey, Tommy.
Right out of the veil.
Oh, at one point, though, there was a time I got my AMP license, and I worked as an AMP, and I got my flight instructor license, and I did flight instructing. And it was like the choices was airlines, which was kind of sucked at the time. There was no jobs.
Yeah, they're laying off.
And finally, you know, well, here's these jobs in Alaska, and I came up here, and I've been here since. And it's been pretty good.
That actually brings up a whole other point, is do you guys think there's more job security at these smaller airlines than there is at a major?
Yeah.
But we've seen a lot of airlines go out of business up here, too. I mean, like I said, there are 13, 14 operators in Bethel not many years ago, and now there are four or five.
You know, the people that were there working they're all the same ones we're working with.
You always got a job.
That's true. You always the yes. Why?
Always a job.
Watch your buddies go off to the airlines and then watch them come back.
Yeah, or go off to come climbing by guys and come back. I need money.
Damn it! This is the place to always. There's always a job here in the state.
Because there's no roads.
So there's something to be said for these jobs might, if there's not job security at the same company, it's easier if a company goes under to get another job, whereas the big airlines, if it goes under, you're not just going to move to the next door, you know, the airline next door.
You always come back here?
So
it doesn't carry over.
That's actually a huge advantage, these non-conventional jobs that I haven't even thought of. So
disadvantage is it's real work.
You don't even talk to me about work. You're flying for Hagelin and no.
It took a while to find this place.
You should come fly with us for a day or two.
Yeah, this isn't our first rodeo, you know.
Oh, you're just smart enough to find a good job and keep it.
Keep it quiet around here.
Well, anytime you want to see some real work going on. But let me pick the day so it's not one of those easy days, like Three Islands or something. That doesn't count. It's got to be a Luckanux back and forth.
Oh.
All right. Well, on that note, anyone else have anything to add? I'm not sure we accomplished a damn thing here, but my God, it was interesting. And I got to go running in the morning, so I got to go home. And my laundry's almost done.